Okay, we are beginning here with Esoteric Astrology number 109A. We're in the Taurus chapter, from a certain perspective, the 12th sign, if one begins in Aries. And if one begins in Pisces, it is, as it were, the 11th sign going clockwise. We've been talking about the power of Vulcan to fashion and the power of the entire human kingdom to become the macrocosm of the lower kingdoms, which are to it the microcosm, and to be the fashioner and conditioner through the power of the will of all these subhuman kingdoms. And there have been a number of enigmatical statements made about those who sleep in the caves of the earth will arise and bring liberation, and that which is of the earth can also be found in the sky. Interestingly, there is this relation of Vulcan not only to the dense physical plane, where it is, in a sense, related to the moon, but also a relationship of Vulcan to the etheric level. The Agni Chaitans, which are both etheric and dense physical, have a close relation to the energy of the planet Vulcan. Anyway, that's where we left off. And now we're going on to page 387, Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 109. It is the subjectivity of this sign which makes the understanding of it so difficult. It's interesting, he also said that about Libra, not about its subjectivity, but two Venus signs, Libra and Taurus, difficult to understand. So the subjectivity of Taurus. Now, this is peculiar in a sense because we are dealing with a sign which has so much to do with materiality and manifestation and with the dense physical level, where the moon is, in a sense, exalted. It will not be until humanity has grasped the nature of the will that the true significance of the Taurian influence will be grasped. Some significance will be grasped. The more material or manifestational significance, because after all, on the fixed cross, we are told that Taurus is the major influence when it comes to the average human being who is driven by desire. But the true significance is something else. And we are told that sometime in the not-too-distant future, humanity will stand with masked intent to work on the dissipation of glamour and the cleaning out of the astral plane, and I think Vulcan will be a planet and Taurus a sign, which will be very important in that process. Both the sign Aries and the sign Taurus are concerned with the initial impact of energy upon form, or of energies upon the soul. As I said earlier in the previous program, they both have their connection to Vulcan. We looked at the Great Bear, Aries, Libra, and then the Sun veiling Vulcan, and we see Vulcan as the ruler of Taurus. So they both have a driving power, initial impacts that set things in motion. I guess you could say they are both concerned with that aspect of God we might call the prime mover, that which moves all things, and which is, in a way, motion itself or energy itself. Man today is becoming slowly aware of the distinction to be found between the opposites, especially, in this case, soul and personality, and is grasping vaguely the true nature of desire. The Buddha's warning about desire came 2,500 100 years ago or so, the great imprisoning factor when directed into the unreal worlds, and he came to liberate humanity from desire, and Taurus is very much concerned with the liberating of humanity from desire. So slowly the implications of having certain types of desires are dawning upon humanity. The implications of having certain types of desires are dawning on the human consciousness. But he is still in the veil of illusion, hiding reality, and whilst there cannot see with clarity. And let us remember how important is the sign Taurus when considering all matters related to sight and vision. Taurus is so important in relation to clear vision. So man cannot yet see with clarity. One of the first opposites, okay, let's see where we are here. One of the first opposites which the disciple has to grasp is that of the subjective and objective worlds. And we can say that thus far, this is hardly grasped by the majority of humanity. Matter of fact, many people feel that the so-called psychological states are really epiphenomena of the functioning of the brain, as if matter is going to produce subjectivity. So that is a great mistake and not yet grasped. This extroversion of consciousness is still prevails. The extroversion of the human consciousness still prevails. Three signs are also closely connected with initiation. Well, yes, and one could say that there is not a sign of the zodiac that is not somewhat connected with one or other of the initiations or the preparation process for those initiations. The hidden secret of Aries, Taurus, and Gemini is revealed at three successive initiations. The secret of Aries is the secret of beginnings. After all, how do beginnings start? Usually, you know, in one sense, usually impulsed by those propulsive forces we call ideas. The secret of beginnings, of cycles, and of emerging opportunity. Always the new will be seen to emerge at some point, and when the new does emerge, it can be dealt with and new possibilities arise. At the third initiation, the initiate begins to understand the life of the spirit or of the highest aspect. Interesting how he connects Aries here with the third initiation. Until that time, he has expressed first the life of the form and then the life of the soul within that form. This experience is of so high a nature that only those who have passed through it could in any way comprehend anything that I might say. Well, you know, Aries is connected with being, with essence, with that which, well, let me capitalize that which substands, with the One, since it is the first sign, the sign of the One. And with the isolation of the One, which we sometimes call isolated unity. So the initiate begins to understand the life of the spirit, or the highest aspect. This is the life of that one out of which all precipitations arise or emerge. So whenever form emerges, let form again be sought, it is said in Aries. The third degree initiate realizes this to be a precipitation of the one substance. So Aries relates to the emergent precipitations of the one substance, I want to call it, rather than substance, because when you use the word, pronounce it as substance, it sounds material, but we are talking about being which substands matter. Substance as being which substands matter. All right. I'd like to make that, add that one to the dictionary. Okay. So this Aries is connected with being, just the way it's connected with the mental aspect per se. The secret of Taurus is revealed at the second initiation by the sudden removal or disappearance of world glamour in the blinding energy of light. So this is connected with the second aspect of divinity. Taurus is the second sign. The astral plane is a kind of second aspect, counting either from the mental plane downward or from the etheric physical plane upward. This constitutes the final radiant activity which consummates the play of the Taurian force upon humanity during the long and cyclic journey to which man is committed. Well, as I understand this, the vanishing of individual glamour is a Taurian factor, but we are talking about the climax of Taurian influence as the vanishing of world glamour. And that is a much larger matter. Of course, the great lights of the spiritual triad must also in a way be involved. And when you think about the monadic plane as a plane of great light and sound, it's hard to divorce Taurus from that plane. I mean, Virgo is involved, of course, Pisces is involved, but Taurus is a sign which has much to do with Shambhala, in which the monad is resident. And if you start with the Logoic plane and see a fire as Aries, which is reasonable to do, and count downward, Taurus will connect with the monadic plane. So I think it's well to state that. And that gives the seven great sounds, should be stated, and great light. Seven great sounds and the expression of great light. The light of life. Now, interestingly enough, both Aries and Taurus are connected with the light of life, and it has even been stated that this is the case, in a way, for Pisces. These are consummatory signs in which the spirit demonstrates itself. But in any case, here we're dealing with the world of light and the dispelling or disappearance or dissipation of all glamour. With Aries, the battle is with illusion, and there must be an intuitive dispelling of illusion which reveals the omnipresence of being, the synthesis which absorbs all things, all precipitated things, into the whole. With Taurus, it is another matter, and the sense of ill proportion, ill-proportioned estimation of things is eradicated in this blinding light. And interestingly enough, another one of those signs, Libra, which it is said to be difficult to understand, is involved in this production of proportion upon the astral plane, and thus in the banishing of exaggerations and minimizations which are distortions and which are essentially glamour. The individual enacts on a tiny scale what humanity as a whole will enact when it takes initiation in Taurus, and this is the second initiation being referenced for all humanity, and this will occur in the rather, I would say, distant future. We have humanity coming to the possibility of the first initiation, and not all of humanity by any means, but a certain proportion of humanity coming into that possibility. But it'll be yet a while before it is possible for humanity to take the second initiation, a long time, really, because between the first and second initiation, we are always told, quite a number of lives elapse for the individual, and therefore, I would say for humanity, quite a number of cycles. What is the analogy on the level of humanity to the life cycle of the human being? It's got to be, of course, much longer, and those cycles must elapse before it becomes possible for that second initiation to be taken by all of humanity. All right, we're talking about the relationship of these three subjective signs to humanity. The secret of Gemini has to be grasped at the first initiation, also associated, of course, with Capricorn, with Leo, with Virgo, and with Scorpio. Capricorn, Leo, Virgo, Scorpio, maybe even with Aries, you know, in a certain sense, because it's the initiation of beginnings. But anyway, Gemini is connected with the first initiation and with the taking over of the dense physical instinct by the etheric body, which has been properly patterned according to certain divine tendencies, and so the greater brother in the etheric sense is controlling the lesser brother in the material sense. Gemini holds the mystery of the father, mother, and child, but this is similar to Virgo. It's very rare that the father aspect is mentioned in relation to Gemini. The two brothers usually are, maybe the son and the mother are mentioned in relation to Gemini. Rarely the father aspect, but it is said of Virgo, of course, I am the mother and the child, I God, that's the father aspect, I God, I matter am. So now Gemini is being associated with the first initiation, the birth of the Christ child upon the physical plane is the consummating glory of the Gemini force, and this is a rather enigmatic thought. Usually the consummation is considered that of Virgo, but let's put it like this. How can we put it? It is the interplay of the two brothers that makes possible the birth of the Christ child upon the physical plane. And this has been taking place over a long period of time, ever since individualization, and more intensively since the first reversal of the wheel, or attempted reversal during the fifth petal process. So one has to read with care and to try to understand. There's less fusion energy in the Gemini energy than in the Virgo energy, both constellations through which the second ray does come, and it is a fusing ray, but the consciousness of difference and the fusion of differences is achieved somewhat in Gemini, but a great integration of forces is achieved in Virgo. Virgo is a more, in a sense, integrative sign. Yes. Okay. But anyway, we will hold this particular statement up for consideration and for contemplation. When the solar angels came, they intended that the newly formed human being would one day demonstrate the Buddhic or Christ energy just as they do. And This is done upon the physical plane, and interestingly enough, masonry is involved in this. And also, in the mass sense, the earth. Gemini is a great servant of the earth and is involved in the Christing of the earth on a in a larger perspective. Gemini involved in the Christing of the earth in a larger perspective. Okay. All this concerns, so basically what we're having here, which is very interesting, we're having the third, second, and first initiations in terms of the three first subjective signs. You kind of wonder if, from another point of view, Aries could not be considered the sign of beginnings, the first initiation, Taurus again the second, and Gemini, intelligent Gemini, related to the fusion in consciousness of the soul and personality aspect, hence the illuminative third initiation. But anyway, the fact that the third initiation is involved with being gives it a special correlation to the sign Aries. Aries is a great sign in which the understanding of being can be better appreciated. All this concerns the subjective energies which express themselves through the medium of the personality or form aspect, in a sense, ruled by Cancer Leo. The fourth elemental, the personality elemental, is ruled by Cancer, and the integration and empowerment of that elemental is ruled by Leo, which rules the lower integrated personality as well as higher aspects of identity. When therefore I speak of subjective energies, I refer to forces pouring from the soul on soul levels into the form nature upon its own level of awareness. So we could say that the energies of Aries, Taurus, and Gemini fill the vessel, which is the personality. He seems to be telling us that all of these energies, we know, I come forth and from the plane of mind I rule, there is a soul impulse involving Aries, but he seems to suggest as well that the energies of Taurus and Gemini are also pouring forth from the soul into the appropriate vehicles and finally into the physical vessel itself. Let's see how we can look at this. Cancer Leo. Cancer is also the physical vehicle or physical vessel. I could illustrate this by pointing out that desire is not, from the angle of reality, a subjective quality except insofar as it is a distorted or glamorous use of the energy of will. The connection between the first and sixth ray is often mentioned and pronounced. That which occurs in the subtle bodies is not considered to be truly subjective. It has to emanate from the soul on the higher mental plane minimally to be considered subjective. So when the will comes forth and is distorted towards personal ends and fulfills glamorous purposes, we call that desire. So the close connection between desire and will is really being emphasized here. Desire is the force of the form nature. Will is the energy of the soul, minimally that. It's also the energy of the higher faculties, but will is the energy of the soul expressing itself as direction, progress, and conformity to the plan. Now, Does the outreaching of desire conform to this expression? That is the question. Certainly through desire, a type of direction is achieved. One is magnetized by and moves towards that which is desired, and one considers the attainment of that which is desired as progress. But to what does this desire conform, really? Is it fed from within its own nature? The third-ray type, for instance, discovers that he's weaving a carpet, a tapestry, and that this process is driven by his desire rather than by a true understanding of the plan, the model of the plan, the heavenly pattern of the skies. And later he sees the ugliness of his carpet because it was not archetypally directed. It was not in conformity with the pattern of the plan. So there are many directions pursued as a result of desire, but they're often false directions, and the progress is not real progress at all. It just leads to some kind of fulfillment which is dissonant with the pattern which is intended. This plan, from the standpoint of the individual, is as much of the sensed will of God as he can at any particular stage in his experience grasp and understand. So will and purpose are preeminent, and plan is a portion. Plan is a portion of purpose and of will. Sometimes will and purpose are considered rather identical. It is God's will, it is God's purpose. These are virtually equivalent. The purpose can also be considered the pattern to be achieved, and the will as the driving energy which moves things in such a way that that pattern can be achieved. So these distinctions also merit consideration. So what have we been learning? We have been learning that true will is a function of the soul, and that desire is a distorted reflection of true will. Oh goodness, desire is a distorted reflection of true will, and comes from the astral plane, and is not subjective, really. Okay, now let's see, I just realized I probably erased some of the text. I don't want that, do I? So let's see if I can go back. Okay. Well, this is a little delay. So we'll turn experience, grasp, and understand. We'll turn to the book itself and try to get the right we'll try to get the right thing here. This is not it. Yes, this would be it here. These distinctions also merit consideration. The average human being may consider desire as subjective. Okay. So now we'll put that in after the word consideration. These distinctions also merit consideration. The average human being. And there we are. That's what happens when certain words get erased. But we manage to retrieve them. Okay. So plan is not complete. It does not give the entirety of God's will, not by any means. It does not represent a purpose in its entirety, but it's an adaptation. Plan is an adaptation, and it relates to the third ray and its adaptive power. So, seems to run into little problems here. Plan is an adaptation of purpose and will, and relates to the third ray. These distinctions also merit consideration. The average human being may consider desire as subjective, as interior, I suppose, because he is so completely identified with form life upon the outer planes that the impulses and incentives coming to him along the stream of consciousness are viewed by him as intangible and mystical. But, of course, they are still quite material. And as his consciousness proceeds inwards and becomes more focused in the subtle bodies, then they will appear quite tangible and not mystical, quite material, really. Yet they are, in reality, but form radiations. That's what he's telling us here, really, isn't he? He's telling us that desire is a form radiation and a reaction and are not truly and technically subjective at all. So, really, desire is said to be a form radiation. That's a good way of expressing it, and not a radiation of the soul. So, from this perspective, will is a soul radiation. The high call of duty, the sense of responsibility, are truly subjective in nature, for they come from the soul, and are the response of the soul to the pull of form. This is something to be remembered. Sometimes people seek to become psychic as if that will necessarily give them some sort of spiritual elevation, but in fact, the average psychism can cover these impulses which truly come from the soul. This is to be remembered then. It's not very glamorous, is it? The high call of duty and the sense of responsibility, these are truly coming from the soul and are truly, truly subjective in nature. Gradually, the disciple learns to distinguish between these distinctive aspects of energy and force which impinge ceaselessly upon his consciousness. There are so many, there are so many energy threads in the stream of consciousness. One must learn to discriminate between them and discover their sources. Discriminate, yes. As time goes on, his analysis becomes ever more acute and more discriminating. We notice that on the verge of conscious soul life, we have the focus upon the highest of the lower 18 subplanes, namely the fourth subplane of the mental plane, whereon discrimination is found. So we are learning to discriminate between that which is truly of the soul and thus subjective and that which is a form radiation. And as we become more and more familiar with these form radiations, we realize, in a sense, their objectivity when compared with a soul radiation. As time goes on, his analysis becomes ever more acute and more discriminating until he knows finally which is an expression of force coming from the form and which are energy contacts coming from the soul. The terms of energy and force are not always used in an entirely discriminating way. Sometimes we speak of the Shambhala force, which comes from a great spiritual center. Why don't we speak of the Shambhala energy? But in a sense, force is an application of, is an application, energy, in a more concrete context than that in which the energy exists. So if we apply an energy to a lower sphere, a sphere lower than the sphere in which the energy exists, we can call it a force. So force is, in a sense, concretized energy. All right. I guess it leads us to many places, doesn't it? This digression was necessary at this point because it is essential that esoteric astrologers should realize that these three signs, Aries, Taurus, and Gemini, are, from the standpoint of the disciple and initiate, where real subjectivity can be found, purely subjective in their effects within the life of these signs. This is the case for those, only for those, who are disciples and initiates. Otherwise, there are some very practical outer effects to be noticed in the life of those who are not. I think, you know, exoteric astrology is also accurate in, as far as it goes, discussing namely the fate and development and condition of the form nature, and not focusing upon that which drives and directs and sustains the form nature. So he really emphasizes the subjectivity here, their origin from soul energy, primarily originating from soul energy and higher. Because, you know, these zodiacal constellations, all of them have their applications on the level of the soul, of the triad, and of the monad as well. But perhaps it's only in the case of true disciples and initiates that the real meaning and intention of Aries, Taurus, Gemini can be expressed and understood. They can only find outward expression in the life of the subject and be consciously directed and controlled in Cancer. So they can only find outward expression in the life of the subject. I suppose this is the soul within the personality and on its own plane, and be consciously directed and controlled in Cancer, thus leading to the great liberation which takes place in the polar opposite to Cancer, Capricorn, and also in Aquarius and Pisces. Because all of the last three signs are liberative signs, and all of them have to do with the final initiations, whether third, fourth, and fifth. Capricorn is related to five major initiations. Does that begin at one or at three? If it begins at three, it's, or even if it begins at one, it's involved with the fourth and fifth initiation. So is Aquarius, particularly with the third and the fourth initiation, maybe the fifth too. And Pisces with the fourth and the fifth initiation, I would say. So these essentially subjective energies find outward expression in the life of the subject and can be consciously directed and controlled in Cancer, where the, where the subjective energies are consolidated in form, thus leading to the great liberation eventually, which takes place in the polar opposite to Cancer, which is Capricorn. So once there is an integration and the informalization, the embodiment of these energies in an integrated way in Cancer, we are prepared eventually to take these integrated energies and arrange for the liberation of the consciousness in the sign of the mountaintop, Capricorn. This, of course, refers to effects upon man upon the reversed wheel. So the subjectivity of these three signs, in question, refer to their effect upon man who is on the reversed wheel. Okay. Okay. In a certain sense, these six signs constitute two major triangles of force. Now, you know, in a way, they are somewhat adjacent, are they not? Actually, we really have seven signs here, don't we? If we include Cancer and Capricorn, the Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, that's four. And Capricorn, Aquarius, Pisces is three more. Let's see how he does this. Signs of commencement and signs of consummation. That's what we're dealing with. Signs of commencement and signs of consummation. Okay. Consummation. I have here indicated to you the higher or spiritual aspect of King Solomon's seal. Obviously, there are so many ways in which this seal is used, you know, the so-called Jewish star, you know, which is a low expression of its nature, the symbol for the Deva kingdom, in a way, the symbol for the monad, in a way, the symbol for great zodiacal energy relationships. We don't really have a symmetrical Solomon's seal here, because opposites are not involved. But maybe it's not so important to have a symmetrical Solomon seal. We do not have a symmetrical Solomon's seal. And we're not exactly sure how these go to together, you know, is it somehow Aries? Well, I don't think I should even really hazard a guess. It depends on whether we include Capricorn or Cancer. There are really seven here. And how could we join these signs? Well, in a way, we can easily join Gemini and Aquarius. They both are strongly etheric in their nature. We can join Taurus and Pisces on either side of Aries, and Aries and Capricorn can also be joined. He's not telling us yet, at least as far as I can see, how to distribute the zodiacal constellations over a particular six-pointed star. Also the six-pointed star is, let's see. When these six types of energy are fused and blended and so form one unity, you will find the emerging star of the Christ. This is a six-pointed star. And the Christ is an initiate of the sixth degree. In fact, he's an initiate of the seventh degree. The six-pointed star is one of the symbols of the sixth initiation. One of the symbols. And is the inner correspondence of the star with which you are familiar. Perhaps that's the five-pointed star, which is the star of initiation. So we'll ask, does he mean the five-pointed star? Sometimes it seems that the five-pointed star is more elevated than the sixth, and sometimes the sixth more elevated than the five. Perhaps the five-pointed star is ultimately the symbol of the fifth initiation, and the six-pointed star of the sixth. And would that mean, of course, that the seven-pointed star is the symbol of the seventh initiation, perhaps? In order to understand this more clearly, I would point out to you that which is begun or entered into at the first initiation is consummated and completed in Pisces, suggesting the relationship between Pisces and the fifth initiation. because that is, as far as man goes, a consummation. A Chohan is no longer a man as is a master. They are no longer men as are the masters, but having passed beyond that lesser stage, have linked themselves to the great council in the highest secret place. Which is rule 7 in the rays and the initiations. That which impelled to the process of involution and evolution, the desire to incarnate, sansa cancerian, takes form at the second initiation in the will to liberation. And this is so important, the will to illumination, the will to liberation as a Taurian factor. The will to illumination in Taurus, and finds itself released through the will to serve universally. That means serve everyone, serve all forms of life on the planet in Aquarius, the sign of universality. That which impelled to the processes of involution and evolution, it is pretty much the sign Cancer. The will to evolve under the third aspect is found in Cancer, and the process of taking incarnation is found in relation to Cancer. The desire to incarnate is found in relation to the Cancerian, almost liberated creative hierarchy, still on the logoic plane, but destined for the astral plane, which is a great sea, and probably related also to Cancer for that reason. What takes place, takes form of the second initiation, is will begins to overcome desire. That's what happens here. Will begins to overcome desire at the second degree. And Mars must give way to Vulcan, which starts to be quite strong. Well, at all the initiations, but at the second degree it's quite strong, representing the will, and also very strong at the third degree, where overcoming Mars altogether. That which impelled to the process of involution and evolution, the desire to incarnate, takes form at the second degree. So there is a will to descend into form, and the will to be liberated from form. Two types of will desire. The will to descend into form through incarnation, and the will to be liberated from form through, well, let's call it simply liberation. The will to liberation. I like that formulation. It had not dawned on me quite so powerfully here. I often thought the will to liberation had a lot to do with Aquarius, Aquarius, Uranus, and liberation, but we know that driving force towards Satori, towards illumination, and towards transfiguration. We can consider this way, that Taurus as a driving force towards transfiguration. And so there is a very close connection between the new group of world servers ruled by Taurus and the spiritual hierarchy ruled by Aquarius. They are both bodies which move towards liberation, but the liberated one returns to serve. So the driving towards the great light of liberation is Taurian. Okay. The drive towards the great light of liberation is Taurian, and once the light is achieved, in Aquarius, one serves with that light. Okay, again, we're dealing with these three subjective signs. That which is fluid and changeable in Gemini Always there is a fluidity and synthesis in Gemini, produces the great shift in consciousness which distinguishes the initiate from disciple, from the disciple. Fluid and changeable. Eventually, the polarization switches over to the higher of the brothers. This, at the third initiation, becomes a fixed attitude in Capricorn, although there are probably vacillations and oscillations under the Gemini experience, in which the realization of the third degree is fleetingly understood or seen or registered. So this, at the third initiation, becomes a fixed attitude in Capricorn. The concrete form life is transcended through transfiguration, I would say, and the inner man reorients and assumes an unchangeable direction. So Gemini always changes, but at this point, Capricorn fixes the orientation. Now, we've been moving. Earlier, we moved Aries, Taurus, Gemini from the third to the second to the first initiation. Now, the first initiation seems to be connected here with Aries to a degree, of the first initiation with Aries, and entering into another kingdom of nature and going around in the counterclockwise manner until Pisces gives us the consummation of the true consummation at the fourth or better fifth degree. Whatever impelled the processes of evolution, and that is, in a way, desire for form life, so Taurus is involved, takes form at the second initiation with the will to liberation, and we do see how important the sign Taurus is at the second initiation, not only in terms of dissipating glamour through a great light, but as a driving force of will towards freedom. Now, you have to say the will to liberation, strongly characteristic of the Buddha. And his teaching. Because many enter Buddhism on the assumption that liberation can be achieved, but of course the ending of pain and servitude for all sentient beings is the service aspect of that will to liberation. And as we've learned in Gemini, the apples, the golden apples of the Hesperides, only roll into Hercules' hands when he has done great service in releasing Prometheus and finally helping Atlas support the great burden of the world. The burden of the world, of course, is Aquarian in this respect. And then the fluid and changeability. So now we're moving in another direction. We're moving towards the third degree. We started with the first degree, went to the second degree, and then culminated with the discussion of Gemini in the third degree. So things go forward and backward, and he's telling us that in the sign Gemini, we do tend to better understand that fluid area of astrological knowledge called the decanates. Okay, we have been moving from the third degree to the first, and now from the first degree to the third. I hinted earlier that this would be possible. Fixity in attitude. If you're a Sun Gemini and you have Capricorn rising, the fluid attitude will eventually move towards greater and greater fixity, hopefully of a spiritual kind. The unchangeable direction, it's pretty Sagittarian in a certain respect, but certainly Capricorn fires it, or sets it, or fixes it, freezes it, crystallizes it. So let's put it this way, that Capricorn crystallizes the fluidity of Gemini. Oh, what a way to spell crystallized. crystallizes the fluidity of Gemini. Okay, so we move from 3 to 1, and then from 1, 2, and 3. From 1 to 2 to 3. All right. You might ask here why I deal with these abstractions. And we have been noticing that Master DK in the last three chapters has dealt with a lot of abstractions. Seems to be somehow a more elevated consideration of the energy relationships from the planetary, systemic, and cosmic levels. More of this has been coming through in the last three signs. Signs of subjectivity, at least for the disciple and initiate. He's given many concrete examples in the earlier descriptions of the signs, and more abstractions than these. You might ask here why I deal with these abstractions. When searching for what an abstraction is, one has just to go to a chapter like this where Master DK names what he's doing as an abstraction. I would reply that in your effort to understand and grasp the truth, which lies beyond your reason, even in regarding it as a hypothesis hitherto unproven, you are gradually developing an aspect of your mind which is much needed in the process of realization and which must be called into effective service during initiation. So he's giving us a pedagogical heuristic method of developing the abstract mind. Okay. So we have to develop faculties which presently we do not have and which we cannot even estimate. We don't really know what they are, but as we deal with the attempt to understand, the attempt is building interpretive muscle, as it were. And it will lead us via the abstract mind towards the processes of realization which technically occur on the fifth subplane of the atmic plane, though there are types of realization, the understanding of new connections, seeing things in a new light, which naturally occur in relation to the Buddhic plane and the higher mental plane and all along the way. But strictly speaking, the factor of realization is related to the fifth subplane of the mental, of the atmic plane. And these faculties must be called into effective service during initiation. Such an effort is needed if true understanding is to occur. Initiation is the demonstration of intuitive understanding put to practical expression. The understanding alone is not sufficient. This is why the very practical sign Capricorn is the sign of initiation. It manifests that which is intuitively realized. Right. Okay. Intuitively realized. Yes. Well, I think you know, some of us may object to being put through our paces in contemplating large abstract issues which seem to have no immediate relevance to our lives. But we are developing faculties which will lead to intuitive realization, and when those intuitive realizations can be successfully and constantly applied, we have the equivalence of initiation. So we are being trained, you know, in doing this, in giving us these abstractions to contemplate. Master DK is preparing us for initiation. There's so many ways that he is working that we do not understand that when we can catch the layers within what he says, so often glossed over, we realize how very conscious he is about all that he is teaching. Probably Alice Bailey, as she was taking these things down, could not fully understand all that he had interleaved within his statements. So we have reached the point, the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 109A, page something, as always, page 391, I assume. And the beginning of Esoteric Astrology 109B, page 391. We are, the Taurus chapter is a long one. I think it lasts almost until page 404. We still have another 12 pages or so to go. We're going at the rate of 2 pages or 3 pages per program. It seems a slow process, but we are discussing many ramifications and many connections which are suggested by what is said here. So it's a synthetic approach, brings in a lot of the other books and Cosmic Fire as well, the implications of what is being said. This hopefully is being revealed to a certain extent. So very shortly we will go on with the beginning, we will continue with the Taurus chapter, with the, as you say, the resumption of our initial theme.